Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Mark Long.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long from the Associated Press. Pat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. In addition to the announcements of who will be starting on offense this week, Jags also clearing Jonathan Cyprian. Pat Tony got the word, within the last half hour, Tony, that he has cleared concussion protocols, which means he'll be back ready to roll this weekend, which is big news for the Jacksonville Jaguars as well. So.
Yeah, though, you know what? I'll say this. Josh Evans played really well.
He did
14
play well.
Tackles. I think he was Pro Football Focus ranked him as the top defender of the week. And I know, listen, I know you're getting into you're giving me that look.
I'm not, because I like Pro Football Focus, but I don't know what to believe anymore, Mark. I really don't, because Jeff Lagerman comes in yesterday after he specifically watches the Jag film, and I got to believe he doesn't know every responsibility in every play, and he admits that nobody does.
By the way, 3 minutes in, and I got a Lagerman reference already.
Well,
I'm gonna start drinking every time I get a Lagerman reference on the show.
Okay,
everybody in the show has a Lagerman hangover.
But he watches the film, and he's shaking his head. We're like, well, they credited Brandon Linder with giving up three sacks. And he's just giving me the Lagerman shake. No, that's incorrect. He gave up one sack. I don't know who to believe. Is Pro Football Focus an accurate reflection of what we're seeing out there, or are they just
making up numbers? I don't know guys at Pro Football Focus. We all do know Lagerman.
Yes.
So,
Lagerman reference.
I'm just saying, if Lagerman, you know, I'll say this. Ryan O'Halloran watches the tape too. Mike DiRocco watches the tape. Pete Prisco watches the tape. You know, if those guys all get together and they all say Linder gave up one sack, then you know what? I'm on board.
Yeah,
one guy,
I
don't know. It's hard to, you know.
I don't know either.
It's a little, some of that stuff, when you watch the offensive line, it is, I don't know that it's necessarily black and white. There's some gray area.
Sure there
who's,
is.
Who's fault, who was supposed to do this,
who's
supposed to
be getting help from whom.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Were
we leaving that guy unblocked on purpose because the back was, or the quarterback was supposed to roll, or
it's
a quick hitter?
You know,
I mean, there's a lot of,
Pro Football
we don't know.
Focus doesn't know what Josh Evans' responsibilities are either. And maybe he made a bunch of tackles getting out of position. We don't know.
fell into tackles.
Well, look, he made plays, and Tony and I noticed that watching the game. It was pretty evident. It looked like, hey, he looks like he's a different guy this week, so. But still, I think it will be a benefit, certainly, to have Cyprian in there with Andrew Luck at quarterback this week, coming into town with the Colts.
No question. The defense gets a lot better with Cyprian on the back end.
The question is, what can they do to put any points up on the board this week? Can they get any push in the running game? They only had 7 true rushing attempts in the game. I don't count the 3 runs by Chad Henne.
Scramble run.
I mean, it's crazy, you know, and, what about dumping it off to the backside of the backfield to slow down that rush? Now here's the good news: Indy doesn't rush. They've got nobody. They don't have Robert.
Well, that's
Mathis.
That's what I was gonna say. Is that the real good news is Indy's the worst defense they'll play. They've played, and maybe the worst defense they'll play.
They're ranked
all
third worst in terms of yards given up through the first 2 weeks of the season. Now they played Denver and Philly.
Sure.
Right. The Jags, meanwhile, have not. They've played Philly, but they played Washington. The Jags have given up more yards than Indy. The worst defense in the league, by the way, is the New Orleans Saints through a couple weeks of the season. So, but like I said, Pittsburgh is not exactly a shining example. You know, you hear, well, this team's ranked 20th, the other one's ranked 30th. It's the difference between 50 yards in the course of an entire game. That's like,
and it's 2 games, and you don't know, and it's a big difference based on who you've played.
It's like 1 first down a quarter.
Sure.
Basically, you know, so it does absolutely factor in against who you played as well. But, no, I'm not surprised that Chad Henne's going to get the start. I'm sure we'll get some calls on that today. 641-1010 if you want to weigh in today. Hall of Fame ballot came out yesterday, by the way, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Tony Boselli's on it once again. Jimmy Smith's on it as well. Jimmy's got some remarkable numbers. I think the bigger problem for Jimmy isn't off the field issues. I think it's the era that he played in and the guys that he was going to be compared with, and I think he has to take a spot in line behind some of these guys.
Sure. I mean, Marvin Harrison's going to be a guy who's going to get in ahead of Jimmy.
Isaac Bruce. Go look at his numbers.
Oh, and then the first ballot guys are Junior Seau's getting in. Who's the other one? There's another guy who's a first timer. You think's going to get in. I know, Seau certainly is a lock, right?
Was it Kurt Warner, Orlando Kurt Warner. Pace?
No, not Kurt a lock to get in this. Orlando Pace, to me, would be a lock for the whole thing.
Yeah, but Kurt Warner's the other one I was thinking about. But certainly, you got Seau's a lock.
I would think so. I would think because the media loves Junior
Seau, and he played pretty well for a number of years.
He was a very good player. I think he's one of these guys that I felt like was an NFL favorite, you know, among the media, and they mythologized him to make him bigger than he was. I thought they did that with Zach Thomas. They've done that with a handful of guys, I feel, over the years. So I kind of always end up holding that against those guys. But Junior Seau was
Is it always middle linebackers?
I don't know. Maybe it's just, it was the next guy that
were
popped
into mind
Were you
going to say Ray Lewis in that?
Ray Lewis was vastly overrated.
I know
Urlacher
was on that list for you for a while,
Wow,
too.
You just don't like middle linebackers.
I don't know.
Poor
no, I'm kidding. I just said that.
I'm telling Jessica.
Palomalu is definitely the hair gets him more credit than he deserves.
Well, he's not playing. He hasn't been playing very well lately.
He's an old fella now.
Well, yeah.
You know, like me. Lost I can respect
lost
that.
A step.
No, what? Hey, he did. He's the only one. No, simmer down over there. All right. So, that's today's Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight today. Will any former Jaguar make it into the Hall of Fame? A guy who's already played. We can't predict the future. I'm sure Blake Bortles has already got his bust half carved.
Alan Hearns, based on his first half, his
well,
first
he
quarter.
Had it.
Yeah, no, it got taken away. That's how quickly it can happen.
Right,
can
you
happen.
Can lose your spot.
You can lose your spot and can very quickly, and Alan Hearns did.
He had a bust. They were just finishing up there like, Hearns with a U? Are you sure? All right.
Is it Alan with an two L's
right.
and an E?
There are a couple
e
of different ways
a?
We could go here. A-L-A-N? What, how do you do that? But no, he gave it right back last week. That was a damn shame. But we'll get into that game a little bit. We'll also look ahead today to the Indianapolis Colts with Mark Long from the Associated Press. If you want to talk about the QB situation, you're certainly welcome to do that. Chad Henne, if you missed it, we were just talking about it a moment ago, announced today as the starter for week 3. And again, as Mark said, more because they know it's going to get asked today and there will be stories written about it by the Indianapolis media. And rather than let there be any speculation and any question about it, the Jags has sent out news to the local area media that would in fact be the case. Sam Young getting to start at right tackle after Cameron Bradfield got released yesterday and Luke Bowanko. So the future of the offensive line is almost in place. Once they get Austin Pastor back, it's going to turn into a top five unit. I think in the National Football League.
They'll be climbing up the charts.
It's had issues, certainly, throughout the first couple weeks of the season. All right, 641-1010. If you want to get in today, you can tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at AP Mark Long, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Lauren Brooks is along. Hi, Lauren. How are you this morning?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. Quick recap. What do we have on Helmets and Heels last night?
Well, you know, after I teased high-waisted shorts and discussing those, we actually never got to those. So, unfortunately,
yeah,
we're going to have to...
What's up with high-waisted shorts anyway? What's the story?
I'm sure Mark Long has an opinion on high-waisted shorts. Huh, Mark?
Sure, of course. You got to have the right body to wear high-waisted shorts.
Yeah, or they should never be worn ever. Maybe that's
well,
the preview.
Well, there's that. But, there, you know, if you don't have long legs, you can't get away with high-waisted shorts.
Yes, but so we talked to Marissa Ierna. She is the 20-year-old cancer survivor, and we delved into her story and then what she's doing with the J Fund and the Go Gold campaign. And then we, of course, talked about the quarterback debate. Blythe said that Chad Henne should be the starter. I said that Blake Bortles should be the starter, and Jessica was the tiebreaker and also agreed with Blythe, so I lost.
Did Blythe get run out of Jacksonville after the show or during it?
You guys are drinking the Kool-Aid. Wow.
I wasn't. I
Not
said,
you.
Yeah.
The other two are drinking the
yeah,
Kool-Aid.
I made a very impassioned argument.
Where was Donna?
Donna was on vacation and is on vacation this week.
She abstained.
Yeah. Oh. I think she would have agreed with me, though.
So it could have been, it could have been a, yeah, it could have been a push. It could have been a 2-2.
Yeah, it could have been. Exactly. And then we would have called y'all, of course, to be the tiebreaker.
Of course. I do have a question for you. What's with the rift between Helmets and Heels and the drill?
Well, so since we've started, we've had a photo shoot at the stadium, and we've had lunches a few different times catered, and then last night we had dinner catered.
I haven't heard about any of that.
Yeah, and so some of the other shows, I think, are not pleased with the quick, I guess, overwhelming graciousness that they've given to us.
The rise
has decided to
jealousy
be generous.
Is an ugly jealousy. Thing.
I'm not going to use that word. I'm not going to use that word. No. So it's just kind of a running joke now that when Helmets and Heels get stuff, everyone else is like, "Well, wait, why don't we?"
Well, Jeff and Dan hit it this morning. There's only room for one set of divas, and they are the divas.
They pretty much try to corner that market.
They have cornered that market. They admittedly corner the market.
I don't know, though. The new divas are doing a good job making inroads.
Obviously. They're making enough inroads to upset the former divas.
Right.
The longtime divas.
So clearly it's having an effect.
All right. Good point.
641-1010. That is the lovely and talented Lauren Brooks. Jaguars today rolling right now. You can get on board in a variety of ways. Today we'll talk about which, if any, former Jags will ultimately end up in Canton, Ohio. What the Jags can do to at least be competitive with the Indianapolis Colts. So are we already at that stage where we're trying to just make it cosmetically look better? I hope not. I hope that's not the case. Home opener coming up this Sunday. Come on out and protect the bank. 633-2000. If you need tickets, you can go to jaguars.com/tickets as well. The number here, 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Changes on the old line, Tony.
Mark called it before we even started.
I called it during the break.
You did.
I said she's either got to go. It's either got to be changes or it's got to be something along the home opener.
Now here's my guess. Lauren had either A, no topic, or switch topics. That's a good idea.
I got to go with changes.
You know, my music themes lately have either been guessed very quickly or have been kind of lame. So I think we're just going to...
I think Helmets and Heels is taken away from her primary
I
job.
I think she needs to be taken down a peg with that ego run of
She was listening on the break and is pandering to Mark Long, who is very critical of the music selections for the past couple of weeks.
Way to knock that one out of the ballpark. First one there.
I'm blushing because I was pandering.
What happened to the fan on Facebook? On Facebook say about Helmets and Heels?
All they said was that my ego gets in the way of listening. So I'm sorry to that person that I come across as a, I guess, massive egotistical person.
And that
I don't
is
mean
so
to be.
Far
I'm guessing
from
they've
the
never
truth.
Listened to any show on this.
Right. But in relative terms, she's one of the least egotistical people on 1010.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
I would agree.
Relative. No, relative. In real life, she's got a huge ego.
Crazy.
But in
crazy.
Relative to like Hicken
she's
and
not
Prosser.
Getting better.
Hicken and Prosser and Joe C and
right.
Hacker
me,
and you.
Right.
Oh, wait, you're.
I, mean, for,
I was.
Do we
you're standing in front of me, but you're
Frank
at the top.
And Rick, come on.
Well, yeah, I didn't even get there. I didn't even get down there. I was going in order of morning to.
I think Mark
tonight.
Knows the best thing. Oh, Mark knows is hiding the humongous ego
sure.
that he has.
He
I
does
mean,
a very good job.
Raging
hiding.
Ego.
And so does Blaylock.
That he
does
has.
A great job hiding it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we see behind the scenes.
Oh,
you don't
we
see
know.
The drama
we
queens
know. We know. We all know. Yeah.
It's crazy.
But relative, Lauren, again, relatively speaking, you're right down there at the bottom of the list.
Well thanks.
Lauren needs, though, to move up the charts is a hat with her name on it. Perhaps.
Well, she's already got
puts
her,
you in a special
She's
category.
Already got her own show, by the way.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, so.
That's
yeah.
pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a collective effort on the show. Come on now.
She needs a hat?
She doesn't need a hat. But if you're going to go full-blown ego, you got to. I mean, it's a nice accessory to have. That's all.
Right. She just needs a sponsor.
I'm sure she's got plenty of those. Let's move on. All right. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Colts coming to town. What can this team do offensively? I mean, what is the hope when you go out there and you run 7 times for 8 yards? Okay. And I know it's the hope simply that the Colts are worse on their side of the ball than the Jags are. On their side of the ball. Is
yes,
that, is
absolutely.
That as simple as it is?
You're hoping that the opponent makes all the difference, that Indy's is as clueless on defense as you are on offense, and that you'll offset each other and be able to get something done.
Right. That hopefully that translates to, instead of, you know, a couple of first downs and a punt, that translates to actual points at some
right.
point in time. Mercedes Lewis, I think potentially a much bigger loss than Jonathan Cyprian
Huge
was
loss.
Last week, right?
Huge loss. I think when you, and I think we may have talked about this on the show, not necessarily so much the most irreplaceable guys on the team,
biggest
but
drop.
The biggest drop off from starter to backup. And Mercedes Lewis was at the top of that list. I don't care what you say, Paul Posluszny, maybe you can make an argument there, but to me, Mercedes Lewis was at the top of the list. I mean, Marcell Jensen was the guy they cut. Cleared waivers, and now was signed to the practice squad. Now he's probably going to be starting this week. Clay Harbor's not ready. Do you give, I don't even know his name, Mickey Schuler, right?
Right. Well, Mickey Schuler's been terrible blocking for this team.
So I'm guessing they you know, listen, they're trying Bowenko. So you're trying Sam Young until Pastor. I'm guessing they're going to try Jensen. You know, you liked him. You liked him for 5 months. Put the pads on, and he kind of went. He disappeared a little bit.
You
in camp.
Liked him as an offensive pass catcher. I think. I don't know.
You liked his size and the he had some potential. He wasn't a blocker in college, but he had some potential to be a blocker.
But did he show that potential? I think that's why. I mean,
no, because he disappeared when the pads came on.
Right. So no, they're going to play in pads this week.
They are. Are you sure?
Yes, they're going to be in pads this week. So
I think they were hoping for shorts.
You're not going to have a physical presence at that position in the run game this week, and you're already. I mean,
but you got Sam Young. Maybe you don't need it.
Maybe you don't. Maybe he's the bulldozer, the road grader. I mean, that's...
What if Sam Young becomes the Hall of Famer?
Hey, you know what? Speaking of Canton, that would be awesome. We'll take it. Nobody knew who Kurt Warner was.
No, Sam Young's the next Kurt Warner. Jacksonville's version
of... He is the offensive line version of Kurt Warner. That would be fantastic. We would take that in a heartbeat. At this point, I'll take 2.5 yards per carry. I don't need Hall of Fame numbers. I need, you know... Bottom third of the NFL numbers. Not
it's been bad.
Straight
it's been
to the
bad.
Bottom of the barrel.
And I assume it's going to get better, but it could get worse before it gets better. That's scary. That's the scary part.
And it really, you think it can't get any worse? It can always get worse. Although 25 yards rushing and 148, I think, total yards.
I think
this
it was
week.
The was it the sixth worst offensive performance of all time, franchise history. I believe that's what it was.
So I know it was pushing top five.
Yeah,
and
it was six.
You had one big play. You take that one play out, and you don't even have 100 yards of offense.
Which
in the
then
game.
Would have been the all-time record.
By far the all-time.
By about half. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and you're taking that one guy who made that play out of the picture
right now. Gone.
That, it was a nice play. It was kind of a fluky deal. You know,
but if you're going to say that, so was the touchdown that to the fullback where Gratz just all of a sudden left him uncovered.
Granted,
it's very similar.
And if that's one of your, you know, touchdown among the 41 points you scored, you can take that and say, okay, we'll take that. We may have gotten a fluke here or there. All 41 probably didn't fall in that category.
Of all the guys benched, of the four guys benched, was Gratz the most surprising to you? That he didn't play well. And
I just watching him this summer. I mean, and this is where we were just talking about this on the break. It's so deceptive out there, man. I mean, and every year. Because we're so hungry for it, and we spend weeks watching these guys day after day, rep after rep, practice after practice, and you're like, wow, this guy looks good, but we throw the caveats out there. It's, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves because they're not exactly going full contact here. They're not going to any contact here with the offensive line and most of those practices. Okay, is he in the proper set? Who cares if the guy can't keep a guy from bulldozing him the second he makes contact?
And for about 3 weeks there, Dwayne Gratz was covering Chad Bumpus as like the number one receiver where, you know, when the Jags were down seven guys at
one
point.
I think Gratz will be okay, though. I mean, Gratz...
Well, but again, he was the biggest surprise to me.
He was definitely a disappointment, no question about it. I thought he had a spectacular... He just had a look to him like he was comfortable. He had an edge, you know, like you want a cornerback to have. You know, that... He throws the switch between he's the most laid back guy off the field to he is one of the more cocky players on this team, and I don't mean that in a negative way whatsoever.
Sure, that's what you want, a little bit of that. You gotta have that to play in this league.
And I thought
ego's a good thing, right?
Ego run him up. Dwayne Gratz would be on the next Helmets and Heels. They can't fit his ego in the room with the rest of them.
But how much of it was an ankle injury with him? Well, I can't remember. Yeah. So I mean, how much was the ankle really bothering him, and he tried to play through it?
Could be.
And he just couldn't get it done. You know, I assume that that's a big part of it.
All right, let's go to the phone lines for the first time today. 641-1010. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We'll start with Ronald here on Jaguars today. Good morning, Ronald.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I just question Caldwell's personnel decisions. Him and Gus with the offensive line cutting starters, the Monroe leaving, keeping Meester around for a farewell tour when we could have drafted a good center. Joko, whatever his name is, I question that, and I want to know why was they throwing on 4th and 16 to Hearns, almost cost him his career. I mean, what was the purpose of that last pass to Hearns on 4th and 16? The game was clearly out of reach. I didn't understand that decision. And Chad Henne is like I said before, who Chad Henne is. He's trying to sell us on him. He's not going to get any better. You got to stop Bortles because he can elude people. He can break off and run, which will make the linebackers respect that because they're not going to respect Gephardt. So, I mean, I'll put Bortles in there. This is the perfect time to put him in there because, like I said, he could break off and run the ball. He can make passes because some of those sacks were on Chad Henne because he was holding the football. You know, Chad Henne needs to have Mike Webster, Munoz, Buscelli, that type of line in order to succeed because he needs lots of time to throw that football. And I just see it being disastrous on we play the Colts. So they're 0-2. We know Luck can light it up, and I think it's going to get ugly. We need to put Bortles in there.
By the way, I think Blaine Gabbert could play with that offensive line and have some success.
Come on, don't be.
Come
silly.
On. Did he say Gephardt?
I think Dick Gephardt.
Gephardt.
He got a few of them in there.
The
he was
like
struggling.
It.
There were
with names.
Know your Jaguars.
Can I answer? You want me to answer
your
question?
Jump right
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I mean the first part of his question. I think there were a bunch of questions or statements in there, but the first part of his question was the Allen Hurns part, and it would have been contrary to what they preach around here day in and day out, which is always competing, always competing, always competing, to all of a sudden at that point to start taking a knee or just run the ball. And a lot of teams do it. I've seen it done. They do it at Florida when they're getting beat in college. You know, you run the ball and get out of there, try to get out of there healthy and whatnot. But for Gus Bradley and what he preaches, it would have been hypocritical and contradictory for him to back off and not try to go for it right there.
All right, I won't reference the guy who was in here yesterday, but we talked about this issue. Okay, I at least won't name him by name. And his point
he
was...
Who shall not, he shall not be named.
The new he who shall not be named. You know, that, look, it's one thing to take a knee. It's another that you've had 7 rushing attempts in this game. How about sacking up and let's go out there for the next 3 minutes and let's get physical with this team because they do need improvement in that area as well. You know, so I know what you're saying. I don't think necessarily... trying to work out the running game is necessarily a concession. The game's over. They know the game's over, whether they're throwing it on 4th and 16 or not. The good news for Allen Hurns is the latest yesterday, they're saying day-to-day. So,
sure.
You know, hopefully it's not anything that caused them to miss any game time for this team because they need him, quite frankly. I mean, honestly, if it were me, I might say the hell with the O-line. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to play. If Cecil Shorts is healthy, I'm going to play those 3 rookies and Cecil out there with Gerhardt or Denard or whoever I've got in the backfield in the single set, and I'm going to swing them out on a little quick route, and I'm going to send a couple of guys along to try to stretch a defense, a couple of quick routes underneath, and I'm going to dump it down to that tailback coming out of the backfield. I'm going to do something, but I'm going to put a little – Max protected nothing for them. They were getting crushed all game. And in Max Protect, then, you've got a couple of guys running patterns. The defense is sitting all over those guys. There's no threat whatsoever. And I think it actually might work to their benefit to throw less protection in there and just spread the whole thing out. But then again, I'm not Jet Fish. So,
right.
You know.
Clearly, they've got some concerns. Whether it's the receivers not running the right routes, not being able to do what they need to do, offensive line protection, quarterback, whatever it is, they've got a lot of issues on offense. And you were talking about Hurns being day-to-day. They also signed Tavares King off Carolina's practice squad.
True.
So he'll be up for the next – he's guaranteed up for the next 4 weeks, I believe, the next 4 games.
Yeah.
So that tells you I don't think Hurns is going to play this week.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. Let's go to Brent up next at 641-1010. Good morning, Brent.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually on the other side of the Bortles conversation. I just moved here, not necessarily a Jags fan, but I pay attention. What do you run the risk of ruining him by like a David Carr situation type of a thing? That's the one thing I thought of.
Well, that's the debate. I mean, that's clearly the debate, and I think that's clearly a factor in the decision making process for the organization. You know, I don't think it's simply who is. You know, because it's not just about this week, and it is. Yes, you want to compete, you want to win this week, but the big picture is that Blake Bortles is the big picture. Blake Bortles is the future of this franchise, for good or bad, right? So what do they feel puts him in the best chance to succeed, not only immediately this weekend against Indianapolis, but for the next 5 to 10 years or however long that turns out to be? But, Mark, I mean, Sam Young's the third-team right tackle. I know now he's the starter, but that's by attrition. And that's all that is. You're playing with a third-team right tackle. You're playing with a rookie center who no one expected to come in here and legitimately take a starting spot.
Sixth-round draft pick.
Right, on this football team. You got another rookie at guard. You just gave up a franchise record in sacks. You're getting zero push in the run game. Therefore, defenses don't have to respect it whatsoever.
You lost your tight end.
You lost your tight end who's great in blocking. And
you got receivers running into each other in pass routes.
You got the head coach saying that a minimum of 10 mental errors for these wide receivers. And that's, again, I'm not trying to mitigate everything. There are some mitigating factors. I'm not absolving Chad Henne. Chad Henne, even with Anthony Munoz and Tony Boselli, is not headed to the Hall of Fame, okay? But we sit there and people watch the game on TV and they say, well, Chad Henne could have avoided this, this, and this, and this sack. And you have no idea what are these receivers doing. What is he looking at the read and say, wait a minute,
they're not
you're
even
breaking right. Yeah. You're supposed to be going left.
They're
here.
Not even where they're supposed to be.
Right. They're not getting lined up properly.
A lot of things we don't know.
So, yeah, I think that caller's right. Now, the question in the debate is, do you accept that as a good enough reason? And I think most of the fans are like, the hell with it. It's never going to be perfect. Throw him out there. The only way he's going to learn. I mean, whether all that is absolutely true, I think that's the prevailing feeling among the fan base.
And there's a number of people who point to the Peyton Manning situation where Peyton got thrown in as a rookie. He was a very top draft pick. There was 29 interceptions. He was, you know, running for his life at times, was under pressure, was throwing the ball up, didn't know what he was doing out there, was, you know, trying to get adjusted to the speed of the game. But it didn't ruin him. Maybe getting hit ruined David Carr, maybe. Maybe Blaine Gabbert got ruined starting here as a rookie. Maybe not. Maybe those guys just weren't the guy. And maybe Peyton Manning, didn't matter what happened to him as a rookie, he was going to be just fine because he's Peyton Manning. So I understand that's part of the argument.
Look at the Hall of Fame ballot that came out yesterday, right? Kurt Warner, right?
Sure.
Started out his career, the greatest start maybe any quarterback's ever had, okay, with the greatest show on turf. Went to New York and got pounded.
Yeah.
And became a shell of himself, right? For the middle section of his career, thought he was done, cast off, irredeemable. You get him out in the desert, Wisenhunt gets him out there with some protection, some weapons, and all of a sudden, he looks like that guy again, but it took him years to get back to that level. I don't know if it's all due to the fact that, you know, Kurt Warner should probably bear some responsibility in there, too. I don't know how you divine exactly what percentage, but it can have a negative impact, clearly. Now, you know, people on the other side, like you said, will point to, well, didn't kill Peyton Manning. Well, okay, that doesn't mean it won't kill the next guy. Sure. We don't know. Maybe there was some great all-time great that got it the snot beat out of him enough times that he never had a chance to realize his potential. I don't think there's a clear-cut, easy solution, but as we were discussing before we came into this segment, it's building in that direction.
Oh,
you know it's
no
coming.
Question.
It's inevitable.
It's happening, and it's been sped up.
And it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, when they had in their head it would be 2015 for Blake Bortles, and then, you know, that's definitively off the table now. Now they know it's going to be 2014. It's just now a matter of, is it next week? Is it halftime of the Indy game? Is it 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now? I'll tell you what, it's not going to be the bye week. It will be before the bye week now.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. More of your phone calls as well at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony, and Lauren Brooks here. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hi there, I'm Chris Berman of ESPN, and every time I get back to the Jacksonville area, I listen to 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey, Mark Long, Fat Tony here with you. Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs. Residential, commercial, industrial plumbing, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, whatever the case. Same day service, Saturday and Sunday included with the right people and the right equipment. Metro Rooter has been serving Jacksonville since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or give them a call at 695-1911. All right, we've got, what was the theme today again?
Changes.
Oh, changes. Moves like Jagger?
Move. Making moves.
Making moves.
Okay.
Making moves.
All right. I forgot what it was. So we just had this conversation 15 minutes ago, I think.
Quite
so,
all right.
Moving.
We have moved on.
Right along. Moving right along. All right. Where are we going to go? I think we got Eric on the line. 641-1010 if you want to get in. What's that? Pat. Make that Pat on the Jaguars Today hotline. Hello, Pat. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Here, stay with me on this. We got a rookie at center. We got a rookie at right guard. We're going to have a rookie at right tackle. If Jensen's in, we got a rookie at tight end. We got three rookie wide receivers. We've got Denard Robinson in his second year in the backfield, and our left tackle is the guy that played four games as a rookie. And we are blaming Chad Henne. I'm not following this.
Well, I mean, the coaching staff's clearly not blaming Chad Henne, I'll tell you that. But I think the people are, I think people realize in their heart of hearts, it's not all Chad's fault. They just feel like Chad's not good enough to elevate anything around him. Right?
That's so, essentially, yeah, that's exactly what the fan base is saying.
Right. So, and I get it. I would play, you know, I think most people would play. I don't,
right.
I'm not,
Mike,
totally
would you play Blake Bortles or Chad Henne? Mark, would you play Blake Bortles or Chad Henne?
Bortles, absolutely.
Right. I would play Bortles.
Right. But
I don't think anybody on this station is really saying Bortles wouldn't play over Henne if it was
our
decision.
At the same time, I don't blame it all on Chad Henne.
No.
I think it's crazy, too. And I do think there is a – that's the one thing that I guess I'm amused by is the level of how much he is the focus of all the consternation. And that's fine. Focus on whoever you like. But, I certainly don't put all the blame on him. But at this point, if you're going to lose by 31 points, to me, go throw him in there and see what happens. Light a spark. Get some experience. Do whatever the case.
Yeah. Just get those games. He's going to have clunker games. Get him out of the way now when it doesn't matter. When it's, you know, the season's, I'm not saying the season's lost, but, you know, if you're going to lose like that, you might as well go down with getting your young first-round draft pick some experience.
And we sit here, and, you know, they've got 14 games left. They cannot approach a season like it is lost. But, damn. I mean, where are the points going to come from right now? Again, you know, you look at all those. We don't need to lay it all out again. The state of the offensive line, the state of the receiver core, the lack of a depth at the tight end position, the lack of a running game. Where are you going to get your points? That's why I think they need to be even more aggressive on defense. They need to, you know what? You're getting beat at anyway. Send the house. Go get after quarterbacks. When do you create offense in this season? When you created turnovers in the first half of that Philadelphia game. That's when you had some offensive rhythm. You were able to get the defense on their heels. They're not expecting to be out on the field immediately. Boom. You turn those into points. All right. Let's get some short fields in.
And they're going to have to start taking more shots on first down, where people think they're going to run. It might be looking in the backfield.
But how many more? What do they run, Tony? 48 plays, right?
And they didn't run much.
They ran Gerhardt seven times. So they're throwing on every down, practically.
Well, or how about this? You know, go back to last season. You know, they started so poorly, 0-8. And then what we saw late in the year, if I remember this correctly, was we saw they got very creative in terms of some trick plays here and there. Jed really dug deep into the playbook to try to create some offense. I think it might be that time right now. You know where you're at, and I know you still got 14 games to go, but you might start digging deep and break out some of the trick stuff.
And I would feel differently, Mark. Maybe you would too, if you weren't so shocked by what happened with the defense this week. What happened to to me, there's much less excuse for that performance. I'm not saying there's ever an excuse to be to put up 148 yards in an NFL game, but at least you can see the reasons why that we're outlining here. You could talk all you like about quick three and outs. They were giving up yardage in the first quarter. You know, I mean, at what point does it wear you out, especially when you're rotating defensive linemen in there? Terrible tackling. Your backup quarterback, your number one wide receiver goes out, the tight end's not even playing, and the other wide receiver doesn't get a look for most of the game, and they're killing you.
It's bad. Listen, it's really bad. You go into that game, you're going, okay, Redskins are also 4-12 last year. Redskins also lost their opener on the road.
They hadn't won in 315 days. They hadn't won an NFL game in 315 days.
Okay, there you go.
That's a long time.
And you think you got a chance. You know, it wasn't like you're playing the 85 Bears here or the 83 Dolphins. You're playing the Redskins, kind of a little bit dysfunctional. Redskins with a new head coach, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They scored 6 points in week 1 against the team that had the first pick of the draft.
You're thinking you've got a shot going in. That's what makes it so disappointing. And then when in the first quarter, when they lose their quarterback and they lose their top receiver, now you're thinking you really got a chance. And defensively, MIA is like being kind. They were just nowhere to be found. I think Gus pointed out that, you know, two guys really played well. I think it was Marks and Roy Miller, which, you know, they expected Roy Miller to dominate.
You told me that last week.
I told you this last week. They expected Roy Miller to dominate Washington Center, so that wasn't a surprise that Roy Miller played well. I think the surprise would have been if he didn't play well. So they expected to be very good right up the middle with those two guys. But everyone else, you know, it was stunning.
All right, let's go back to the line, 641-1010. Fred, you're up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Yes, thank you very much for taking the call. A quick question. I listened to Jeff yesterday, and here's why I think Henny's the problem. And Jeff sort of talked about it, but never got to this solution. He said, essentially, that when you looked at all the sacks, three or four could be labeled to the receivers, three or four to the line, and three or maybe four to Henny. We know the line's rookie. We know the receiver's a rookie, but Chad is the veteran. If you're comparing him to them and saying, well, it's okay, he had the same amount, that's just the wrong way to do it. And I think Chad is a major piece that he needs to be lifting this team, and I don't think he's got that capability.
All right, well, get in line behind the other 65,000 that feel the same way. I'm not mocking your opinion. I think you're probably right.
Dead on.
But when you watch that and you watch film and you try to assess blame on who's at fault on the sacks, and you say, well, some of these are on Henny, that's still an educated guess, okay? Because even unless, as Jeff said, he sits down and watches the film with Jed Fish, because Jed Fish knows who every one of those sacks is, or sure, who's responsible for each one. Did the receiver run the right route? When you think Henny should have been getting rid of the ball quicker, did he look up and was the guy in the completely wrong position? We just took a look. Tony just showed us the play to Mercedes Lewis that resulted in the touchdown.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee basically run a pattern that's going to have them on a head-on collision to run into each other.
Yep.
On that play, on the same side of the field, and if the defense is half paying attention, the guy can drop off of Marquise Lee and help on Mercedes Lewis, and maybe that play never happens because somebody's running the wrong route on that play. And how frequently is that happening? Gus Bradley said, and keep in mind, they only ran 48 plays. They ran it 7 times. So out of 41 pass play snaps, you had at least 10 mental errors by the wide receivers on those plays. That's an obscenely high amount. I mean, you see, when Peyton Manning, when one guy runs a bad route for Denver, once, you know it. Right?
Oh, you can see it on, or Brady.
And
same
they're
thing
getting
with Brady.
Chewed.
Sure.
One route. And we're talking about 10, and who knows? He's at minimum of 10. Could have been a dozen, could have been 15. You just don't know. I'm not absolving him, because he is a veteran, and he should have more savvy than these guys. But there are mitigating factors here.
And again, just as the caller pointed out, maybe they're asking Chad to do too much with all of the rookies around him, with all the uncertainty, unsettledness around him. You're asking Chad to be the veteran leader there. And not that he's not a veteran, but he's not going to raise the level of play of everyone around
him. You know what
him.
They're
it's
asking him to do, Mark? They're asking him to take one for the team. Honestly, in the end,
no,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're saying,
go be the tackle.
You got
dumpy.
Almost no chance to succeed here.
Yeah.
Okay? And they're never going to express it in those terms, but all these things. Yes, go out there and be the tackling dummy. You're the one. You're going to take all the criticism. You're going to have all these things go wrong around you. You're going to take a beating.
And we're paying you $4 million to do it.
And we'll pay you $4 million, and that's, you know, and he, but it's not like he's complaining about
no.
it. I mean, he's been the good soldier.
And he knows what he got into. He knows.
Absolutely.
He knows.
Okay, now, he certainly had hoped it would be better than this. I don't think anybody thought, after 2 weeks, we'd be talking like this about this football team. I really, not necessarily that they'd have won one of these games, but let's go toe to toe with the Washington Redskins. Come on. You know
right.
what I mean? So I think it's the start, the degree in which they got handled this week. All right. Let's get one more in, before we break here, and we're going to go to Michael up next. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Hi. This is Mike, first time caller. Hey, quick question, guys. Have y'all ever seen 10 sacks in one game?
Not since I've been covering the Jaguars, because it hadn't happened before. No.
Exactly. Well, my question is, get a kid a chance. Let's get him in there and let's see how he operates, you know, with that type of pressure. I know our line is atrocious right now, but I don't think I ever watched a game with somebody get 10 sacks. I know I say a lot of them wasn't on Chad, you know, this, but they all part of that team. So to me, I don't think any quarterback in the league would ever get 10 sacks in one particular game.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Actually, quite a bit happened on this date in football history. It's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, the NFL. The National Football League, we've heard of them. They organized in Canton, Ohio on this date in 1920 with 12 teams paying how much each to join the American Professional Football Association, Tony? What do you think? What was the entry fee?
$500.
All right. Keep in mind, Shad Khan's entry fee was 760 something million.
Yes.
Right. Mark, what do you think entry fee was for one of the 12 professional clubs back in 1920? Join the NFL.
$50.
$100. So yeah, he went. He was closest without going over.
Yeah, I win the whole. Do I win? I was within $100, so I win. I was within $100, so I win both prize packages. Right?
This is true. That is how it works on the prices. Right? You win the showcase showdown. Exactly. You get the camper.
And please have your pet spayed or neutered.
Yes. Oh, Bob's a big proponent of that. First NFL game in Washington D.C. played on this date. As the Redskins beat the New York Giants 13-3 in 1937.
Darn it.
1950, the San Francisco 49ers, who formerly played in the All-American Football Conference, played their first NFL game. And in 1961, likewise, the Vikings played their first NFL game as they beat the Chicago Bears 37-13. And, oh, lo and behold, they're in the news again. Vikings.
No doubt.
The New Orleans Saints played their first game on this date as well, 1967, losing to the L.A. Rams 27-13. George Blanda, born on this date, played for a multitude of teams, primarily known for his work with the Raiders, also played for the Bears and the Oilers, born in 1927. And Mark Brunell, 1970, happy birthday to the best quarterback in franchise history. For your Jacksonville Jaguars. Those are some of the things that happen on this date.
Much.
Well, it's a low bar, but still, I mean, he's clearly the best, and he was a multi-time Pro Bowler, Pro Bowl MVP, got him to a couple of conference championship games. It's pretty good, you know?
Yeah, not bad.
Mark was not chopped liver. It is a low bar. There's no question about that.
Does not have the single season record for touchdown passes, though.
David Garrard.
There you go.
There you go. I want to say Brunell's, like, career total high single season total was in the low 20s rushing and passing combined.
Wow. Yeah,
you know, it was high because in 96 he threw for 4,300 yards, which was a very high total at that time, and just didn't have the TD passes. It seemed like maybe most of those came in the final eight games of the year when they were just blisteringly red hot and rolling over teams.
And they could run the ball. You know.
They could definitely run the ball. Located on Gate Parkway, Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry features the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard. They're a certified Invisalign provider, and they offer a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. Visit jamesjmccall.com or call 620-9225 to make an appointment. That has been this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Like you said, Mike, the Minnesota Vikings back in the news. They have placed running back Adrian Peterson on the exempt commissioner's permission list. This comes just the day after AP was reinstated by the team after being deactivated for the team's Week 2 game. He was indicted by a grand jury on account of reckless or negligent injury to a child over the weekend. Team owners Ziggy Wilf and Mark Wolf said in a statement, quote, "After giving the situation additional thought, we have decided this is the appropriate course of action for the organization and for Adrian." The team is saying that they will keep Peterson on that exempt list until his court case is resolved. Wes Welker is set to rejoin the Denver Broncos at practice today, reportedly, as the players in the league are finalizing a new drug policy that they have agreed upon. Wes Welker, Rams receiver Stedman Bailey, and Cowboys cornerback Orlando Scandrick among the notable names that are expected to see their current suspensions end as soon as the deal is finalized. Browns receiver Josh Gordon and Colts receiver Lavon Brazil will have their season-long suspensions reduced down to 10 games under the new policy. Speaking of Josh Gordon, he pleaded guilty to his DWI in North Carolina back front in July yesterday. Now faces a year of unsupervised probation, $100 fine, $290 in court costs.
$100 fine, that can get you an NFL franchise in 1920. Hey,
that's right. Get your
chair, kid.
Hey.
Yeah, step
Gordon,
right up.
Gordon repeatedly pled guilty, hoping to avoid a mandatory two-game suspension for his first DUI, which would be the penalty under the now-going-into-effect agreement between the players and the league. I think we're all curious to see how the league is going to handle Gordon and whether or not they will allow him to pick and choose essentially which offenses fall under which agreement between the two sides. And because it got brought up earlier today, went back and looked at the numbers, the Jaguars had 18 first-down plays in the game against the Washington Redskins. They threw on 14 of those first downs. They ran on four of them, and in the first half, when you could at least argue that the game may have still been in doubt, that number was 6-3. So in the second half, it was 8-1. But even in the first half, when they were still in the game,
right,
it was 6-3. And it's something that Fred Taylor pointed out immediately on the post game when he was watching the game and they came out with that first series, throw, 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 three and out. He said, they don't think they can run the ball. They just don't flat out don't believe that they can run the ball, so they're not even going
to
try.
Right, and it's like, well, you know, you have to stick with it, you have to grind it out, blah, blah, blah. Well, how many times can you run yourself into the brick wall? And if you go in feeling we're not going to have success doing this, are you doing it just cosmetically so you can't be criticized for not doing it? I don't have a problem with them throwing the ball. Clearly, show me some holes on the offensive line, and then I'll get behind, you know, loading up on Toby Gerhardt's back. Let me just, the Josh Gordon thing is so stupid. It's beyond belief. Josh Gordon was going to have his marijuana suspension reduced to 10 games because of the new parameters.
Sure.
Right? Yet, he pleads guilty to DWI, so he gets judged by the NFL under the old parameters. So I guess if you're a player, you get to pick and choose. Well, for this DUI, I'd like you to judge me under the old rules because they're more in my favor, and I'll take the new marijuana rules because they're more in my favor. Does that make sense? I mean, shouldn't it be either or? Okay, you want to be judged by the new rules? Fine, across the board. Well, you're going to get a 2-game suspension for the DUI on top of the reduced amount of games for the marijuana. This doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's unbelievable. No, I'm with you. I don't get it. I don't really understand it.
That's the least of their problems right now. Let's be serious.
No, I mean, he should get 12 instead of a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially what should happen. He should be suspended for 12 games.
Right. And it's not, in the end, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And look, believe me, as a guy who plays fantasy football, I want Josh Gordon back as soon as possible just from a pure, you know, Machiavellian standpoint. As long as he's not killing anybody behind the wheel of the car, please don't do that.
And the fact that Ace Sanders isn't getting reinstated, does that mean that, like, he smoked a truckload of weed?
Well, you know,
like,
they didn't even raise, and we don't, first of all, we don't know specifically, at least I don't know specifically what he was suspended for, but let's presume it was marijuana for the sake of conversation. They raised the world anti-doping threshold we've talked about is 150 nanograms of THC per whatever, right?
Sure.
The military and the government, if you have a military job, government job, is 50 nanograms. The NFL was down at 15. One-tenth an Olympic athlete could smoke 10 times as much marijuana and still be eligible to play in the Olympics than an NFL wide receiver. They raised it, but instead of reaching that same threshold, they raised it to 35. Still below government standards. Right, it's like a quarter of the world anti-doping standards. So even though it went up, you know, the story of Josh Gordon was that threshold of 15, his first sample they tested was like at 16, okay? The second one, the way it works, if the second one shows any trace,
right,
then they know it's not a false positive, and then you're busted. The second one had 13 particles.
Which would have been...
Had they tested that one first,
he doesn't even
go to the second sample, and he's never suspended to begin with. So his case, I can almost buy that it may have been secondhand smoke because the amount in his bloodstream was so incredibly low. But, you know, regardless, it's the way it was handled that it, almost like he got to pick off the a la carte menu on how he's going to get punished
yeah.
for this whole circumstance.
And it's I'm not, you know, trying to downgrade anything that he's done, downplay. Even the DWI, though, when you read the story, it was 0.09 in a state where the legal limit is 0.08. I mean, he's been right on the edge with both of these things. That doesn't mean that he shouldn't be penalized for both.
Correct.
I mean, he should be penalized for both.
But he wasn't knocked down, fall down, drunk
right.
behind the wheel of the car.
Right.
Right. It's still, like, DWI.
Don't get behind the wheel after you drink.
Don't drink and drive.
Right.
Period. Period. Just that's it, and that's a simple solution. That's well within your control. So I'm not sympathetic to the fact that he got suspended.
Sure.
So what?
But that sounds like a guy that it may have even been a case where he was at the bar, he had a drink around 8, and sat around, saying, "Look, I'm going to wait till I do feel like I've sobered up a little bit before I get behind the wheel." Who knows? But
hey, guys,
I'm calling.
I do buy that it could have been secondhand smoke. I mean,
I really at that threshold,
it sounds like a young guy who doesn't really understand. He thought that he was doing things the right way.
Or maybe one quick hit.
And
what if he just failed to really clean his system? Like they have these cleansing agents, and
sure.
he thought
good
he was
point.
Clean. He thought he was
93% clean.
Yeah, he thought he was cleaning it.
Point too.
And you know, it just didn't work quite like he thought.
Man, have we come a long way since the days of the Wizinator, you know? And meanwhile, Someone out there has got to be thinking about a remake of the Playmaker series at this point in time, right?
Gosh.
I mean, could you...
Wonder why the NFL shut that down.
Right. Hit too close to home? I mean, honestly, yeah. Some of the storylines were a little absurd. Like the one guy, as I recall on Playmakers, if you don't know what we're referring to, it's about, what, 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
The ESPN series that lasted for a season, and the NFL put pressure on them to discontinue it because it cast him in a bad light. Never called it the NFL, but it was clearly a show about what goes on inside the behind the scenes, yeah, right, of the pro football world. Didn't one guy actually leave the locker room at halftime and go to the parking lot and cop drugs in the parking lot at halftime of a game? That was the point that I think that was an episode on Playmakers, and I was like, really? Really?
Really?
Right, I mean, yeah. He really went to the parking lot?
Like nobody would see him
walk
out.
Like there's never any stragglers hanging outside the stadium, right? This guy comes out in his shoulder pads.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds outlandish, but I know ESPN has the 20 for 20 series, the Unguarded episode that they did. Now it's basketball, so it's a little bit easier to do.
Who's that about?
I can't remember his name, but he went out at halftime of a game that he was playing in college to cop drugs.
Huh.
Did it.
Was it like, who was it, like Chris Washburn or somebody like that?
I can't remember who it was. Anyway, I'll look it up.
But he really did that. He went outside.
Yep.
I find that hard to believe, even, you know, 10 years ago in the NFL, that you'd be able to go undetected with as many media as cover the league. But regardless, the rest of the whole series, I think, may have been a documentary at the time. Not sure about that. 641-1010, if you'd like to weigh in today. We'll talk a little bit about the situations going on around the National Football League. Also, get into the Hall of Fame. What do we think in terms of former Jaguars ever making it in? The Hall of Fame ballot for 2014/15 has been released, and on it for consideration are Tony Boselli and Jimmy Smith, among many others, but the former Jags that are on there. And the question of the day from the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asking you, simply, do you think any of these former Jags, you can throw Fred Taylor in there, throw anybody you like in there, do you think they're ever going to make it into enshrinement in Canton, Ohio, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Later today, I'm going to select a winner in the Foundation Professionals of Florida photo contest and give away a pair of tickets to the home opener. Jags, Colts, if you don't win the tickets, certainly tickets are available in a variety of ways. And you can go to jaguars.com/tickets, pick up yours that way, 633-2000. And if you're a season ticket holder, they are selling single game single seat available tickets for $19 to season ticket holders for the remainder of the week through Friday. So, if you want to come on out, protect the bank. I'll say this, it's in a strange way. I know mentally, intellectually, I believe Indianapolis is a better team than Washington is. But because their lack of pass rush, their lack of resistance on defense in general this year, and the fact that I hope, put it that way, that the performance by the defense was a gross anomaly from what we're going to see most of this year, I actually feel like they've got a fighting chance this week if they can somehow manage to create some turnovers, because I think they're going to need the short field to get points. But maybe it's just pie in the sky. Maybe I'm being naive. Maybe it's wishful thinking. But I don't think I go into this game thinking, man, Indy's just going to blow them out by, you know, three or four touchdowns. You do, I think.
I do. Yeah, I think they're in trouble.
Oh, I'm not saying they're not.
I think that offense has looked so pedestrian in two games, with the exception of a couple Allen Hurns touchdowns and a Mercedes Lewis touchdown busted coverage play. I think that I think Indy's defense all of a sudden is going to look like
that could be the case.
2000 Baltimore Ravens.
Put it this way, if they do,
2001.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, right? Because, wow. Where do you go from? San Diego at home just whipped Seattle. You know, I don't know if they whipped them, but beating Seattle, we'll count that as a whipping.
You'll feel like you whipped them, no matter what the score is.
Right, yeah. And that you're going to the same venue. Nobody's picking them in week four. I'm not necessarily picking them in week three. I just, out of the next couple weeks, this is clearly the better opportunity. Let's put it that way.
You know, and I'll say this. All of the goodwill and the momentum that this team built up in the offseason with the stadium renovations, the pools, the cabanas, everything that, you know, you draft pick, Bortles, everything that went right, it's gone now, right? Like, you're coming home, and it should be this, hey, we're going to officially unveil the new stadium.
I don't think it's completely gone, but it's certainly been, it's taken a major blow. There's no question.
I think it's gone.
Well,
I think the positive momentum of the offseason and, look, right or wrong, the expectations from the fan base changed for this team during this offseason. I don't think there were a ton of people who expected this to be an 8-8, 9-7 team competing for a wild card spot late in the year. But they never expected to have to look at something like 2013 again. And they got that last week. I mean, that was as bad as
got
anything
in the
that happened.
Half.
Right.
The problem is they got
the
in
opener.
The second game.
Right.
The last six
so
quarters.
Now,
the last six
even,
quarters.
Before they can even take advantage of the pools and all that momentum coming back home and that energy of this fan base, they have that. The last six quarters have completely drained the fan base of that. I'm really curious to see how much energy the fans bring on Sunday and how much, especially on defense, this team can feed off of it, because I still think there's a lot there on the defensive side of the ball and that they can be really good here at home. I'm curious to see how much energy there is on that side of the ball in their first home game.
They lose that game 31-27. It's a completely
yep.
different feel this week, right?
Sure.
I mean,
oh,
and,
sure.
And here's the thing. Along the way, if they go 6-10, right, and they are competitive in 8 of those 10 losses and they suffer 2 of those losses like they just did, it's okay. If it's not leading off, you know, batting
right.
now, batting lead off,
right?
The
oh,
last
sure.
six quarters. So if you, you know, if you had, if you were 2-3 and you were competitive throughout and you play one of these games, you're like, oh boy, all right. But
there's
we have
progress.
Seen some, right, 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
Sure. And you're competitive in games. And again, I pointed this out before, 20 of their last 34 games, Mike, double digit losses.
Ouch.
20 of the last 34. And that's just a stunning, stunning number.
I agree. We didn't expect it to look like the first half of last year, and hopefully at any point this
it looked
season.
Very similar it, to it, the first 8 games of last year and the finale last year, which was a beatdown against the Colts.
And, but it felt worse because of the offseason of optimism and the quality of opponent that you were playing and all these things that were going into it. So, all right, let's go back to the phone line, 641-1010. Ralph, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
I got a couple of questions for you. Long term, do you think Bradley's the coach, or is he just here for as a cheerleader? And then, you know, at some point, doesn't David Caldwell have some accountability as far as, you know, sure, he got Bortles, but he's also responsible for the rest of the team. I'll take that off the air.
Well, at every point, he has responsibility.
Sure.
I mean, but I don't know if you're asking... If you're asking the question, at some point, does he have responsibility? Well, I think you know the answer to that. If you're asking, are we ready to get rid of the GM and the cheerleader? I mean, head coach.
Cheerleader.
I mean, you know, that's yes. They of course they have responsibility, but you're 2 games into year 2, taking over a team that went 2-14 when you took it over, and you knew you were going to again. Lose this game 31-27, lose it in a different fashion, and I don't think we're having this level of conversation about the coach and the GM, who most realistic people felt were not going to put this team in position to be a playoff team this year. They could still win. Look, last year, Mark, when they were 0-8 at the low point when they got blasted in London, who could have predicted they'd win 4 of the next 5 games?
Was that the low point?
At that point, I think it was, yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, they had a play
where they didn't cover the fullback.
They had that last week.
I know, which is exactly why the fan base feels the way they do this week.
Seattle was a pretty big beatdown, too, last year.
Yeah, but Seattle's maybe the best team in the league. I mean, they won the Super Bowl, and you're going all the
San
way.
San Francisco,
you didn't know that at the time.
You knew they were pretty good, regardless.
Yeah.
I mean, Seattle came. It all culminated to 0-8.
Sure.
However you want to talk about it. It was just... It was pretty bleak, and then they won 4 out of 5 games.
Right.
But you can't just say, well, we did it last year. There's got to be something tangible that you could point to if you're going to have any expectation of anything like that happening again. And right now, that's where we're having – I do think, even though the results weren't there, I think the defense is better than they showed this week. I don't know if the offense is better than they showed.
They're going to get better, though. That's the thought, is that the more these guys play, the rookies, the number of rookies, the number of inexperienced guys they've got on there. I think I just did the numbers. They got so Luke Jokel, your starting left tackle, has got seven career starts, only two on the left side. Luke Bowenko will be making his first career start. Brandon Leonard now has two starts under his belt. And Sam Young, the guy you're turning to at right tackle, has a whopping four career starts. So not exactly, boom, you know, a lot, yeah, not exactly a lot of experience there. And the receiving core, you know, we've touched on before, you know, and then now all of a sudden if Jensen's in there, it'll be his first career start. So, you know, they're going to get better. They've got to get better. And it'll happen. I just don't know how long it's going to take.
641-1010. Jerome, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
Good. What's up?
At first, I just want to say, and then I ask you a question. At first, I want to say I was a Bortles, you know what I mean? Like start Bortles kind of guy. But after I seen that game and the offensive line just couldn't protect Henny or whatnot, I think as long as Henny wants to do it, I think we have at it. You know what I mean? Let him stand in there and let him take the hits or whatnot if that's what he wants to do. But the other thing is, I'm a Miami Hurricane fan also. And Jeb Fish, I mean, we never really had a good offense like over there in Miami, whether it was talent-wise or whether it was his offense or whatnot. It's just, we haven't really had an offense over there. And him translating to the NFL, I think it's the same thing. Because the only thing we really had in Miami was known for, besides back in the day, not the wide receivers and everything, but I'm talking about right now, the only thing that we're really known for is like a running back, maybe. You know what I mean? But other than that, I mean, that's as of late. So if he doesn't have like a good run game behind him, I think that he's not going to have no passing offense, because obviously it just doesn't work with his kind of offense. And what do you think about that?
I don't know what is his kind of offense when he's got this. What do you do if you're Jed Fish differently? The one thing I would do is try to throw the running backs more to try to slow down some.
You made that very clear.
Well, I mean, but that's
you
all
wanna
I got.
See, you want right? to see some screen passes?
I do.
I want to see some trick plays. I think you got to.
Okay.
You gotta come catch them off
that
guard.
That can't be your offense.
They can't
even
run a bootleg, Mark. I mean, a trick play at this, a gadget play.
Listen,
they can't even run a bootleg.
You got to try something. They did it very well at the end of last year. I think you continue to roll in the pocket. I know that shortens the. You know, it shrinks the field, and, you know, he's only got one side of the field, and it helps the defense a little bit. But I think when the offensive line's getting beat like that, I think you just got to keep rolling the pocket.
The problem with that is, though, it's all predicated on that fake handoff on the stretch play,
sure.
And nobody's respecting that right now.
Well, yeah, you're right. But how are you going to fix that? You're all of a sudden going to be able to run the ball? They haven't been able to run the ball in preseason or in two games.
I don't know.
That's the big question is, how do you fix an offense when everything they need to get it started isn't working? So when you're getting ready for Indianapolis, what's the game plan? I mean, they don't have a tight end right now with Mercedes Lewis-Howes, at least not one that you feel like can block for you. So you feel the fullback's going to be on the field a lot more this week, you would think. You have to figure out some way to manufacture a running game. I do think it's the short passes, the screen passes, that kind of thing. At least try it so that you can loosen something up.
Who's the OC in Denver?
Peyton Manning.
Right? That's my point, right? I was going to go through a list of them, and is it Gase? Adam Gase? Is that the
I have
guy?
No idea.
Whoever it is. Doesn't really matter, right? Who cares who the OC is? Who's the OC in Green Bay? Does it matter to you? They got Aaron Rodgers. That's
right.
What the important thing is. I don't know if Don Coryell could come in here. Who you want to come in here with this group right now that you think would be lighting up the scoreboard? I'm not saying Jed Fish is going to be a great offense coordinator. I just think it's very tough to judge right now, you know, what they've done. I don't personally, I know there are folks out there saying you can't throw as much because you're going too quick, three and out, you're putting the defense in a bad situation. Are you going to run into a brick wall continually if you know the brick wall is there, you know? And that's, I think, where things stand in the running game right now.
You have to at least try, though.
I guess.
You have to. And that goes back to...
And maybe you'll be able to run against Indy.
The missed opportunity that we were talking about yesterday with Loggeman a little bit there in the fourth quarter. Look, run the ball. For that last 10 minutes, just say, guys, we're going to run the ball. We know we aren't very good at this right now, so we're going to... It's basically camp, boys. Go out there, and this is the drill. right now. We're going to run it until you guys puke. Make it happen. At least try it at that point. Who cares about the passing game? You're done.
Yo, Dan and Jeff, a dollar for referencing the drill, by the way.
Sorry.
Right there. 641.
Do they have that trademarked?
Sure, why not? 641-1010. Okay. Dennis, you're up next here on Jaguars Today.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you had asked the question about maybe some former Jaguars that might have a chance of being enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
I guess the three most obvious guys would be Buscelli, Fred Taylor, and Jimmy Smith. But, you know, each one of them, as great as they were, they all got strikes against them. Because I guess you look at a guy like Fred Taylor, I mean, he was everything you wanted a running back to be, had longevity in the league. But, you know, how do you put a guy in that only made the one Super Bowl? That's going to always stand against him. And then you had Buscelli, who was obviously easily the best left tackle in football the entire time, most of the time he played. But he had, like, the Gale Sayers thing going, you know, with the shortened career. But then you got Jimmy Smith. Now, Jimmy Smith is the strangest. I mean, he's the one that piques your curiosity the most, because Jimmy Smith was dominant. He was great. He could catch every type of ball, run every type of route, speed, had everything you wanted, longevity. But, you know, this new NFL, and I'm not trying to be facetious, but, you know, they're trying to paint themselves as a family-friendly NFL. You know, they want to appeal to every demographic. So, you know, unfortunately, he had the personal problems. He still got them. And, you know, they probably don't want to put somebody like that at the podium, you know, and enshrine. I don't even know if he can make the podium.
They put Lawrence Taylor at the podium, they'll put Jimmy Smith at the podium.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor's a great player. I'm not saying he's not worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. I'm saying his personal issues dwarf Jimmy Smith's personal issues.
He played coked out of his mind. Yeah. We all know that.
I mean, and they continued well past his playing career and all that. So I get you. I don't think that is the overriding thing. I think Jimmy Smith, just you look at the numbers, compare him, and we'll do that coming up here in a minute. As we take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, compare him to a guy like Isaac Bruce. And is Isaac Bruce a lock for the Hall of Fame? I don't think he's a lock in today's pass-happy NFL, but he's certainly in line in front of Jimmy. Go look at Rod Smith of the Denver Broncos. Go look at his numbers. And what they have, they got rings, both of those guys, one for Bruce, two for Rod Smith, and they've got comparable numbers on top of it. That's what I think.
Holt's right there, too.
That's right. And that's the former Jaguar who's going to make it in the Hall of Fame one. By the way, Torrey Holt. Former Jaguar, Torrey Holt.
He's going to be on the bus.
We're gonna campaign for some tea up in Canton, baby. All right. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back with your Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute injury report. Unfortunately, it's a fact of life in the National Football League. Injuries are going to happen, and they've impacted your Jaguar team. Dr. Stephen Lucy joins us next for that. We'll look at the fan feedback spotlight. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're along with us. Jaguars Today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.
I'm Jessica Blaylock with your Rubber Meets the Road play of the game, brought to you by Big Chief Tire, operated by a family that treats you like you're part of it. It was a rough game for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they dropped their second matchup of the season to the Washington Redskins by a final of 41-10. The Jaguars were able to luckily avoid the shutout in the first half thanks to a touchdown by tight end Mercedes Lewis.
Shotgun, straight drop. Fires out to the right. Once Mercedes Lewis. Mercedes has it. He's on his feet. Mercedes inside the 20-yard line. Mercedes inside the 10-yard line. Mercedes inside the 5. Will they call it a touchdown? Yes, they will. Handing to Mercedes Lewis, and the Jags are on the board.
Unfortunately for the Jaguars, Lewis did suffer a high ankle sprain at the end of the game. He will be out for the next 6 to 8 weeks. Play of the game. Big Chief Tire, for all your tire and service needs. 4 convenient locations throughout the Jacksonville area.
Go hunting and fishing with Jeff Lagerman, Captain Kevin Faber, and Captain Kirk Waltz. The greatest storytellers on the radio on the Nimnicht Outdoor Show. Every Saturday morning from 7 to 10 on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right.
Sorry, I'm still laughing.
We're enjoying our
conversation. You haven't even finished that story, and I'm still laughing.
I'll pick that up later.
I think
that's been told on the station before, so it's not nothing that...
I've never heard it.
Yeah, it's been
news
told.
News to me.
Anyway, we'll get into the whole thing. We'll get your reaction to the fan feedback spotlight coming up momentarily here, as every week we take a look at the unfortunate reality of the National Football League in terms of the injury report. It's brought to you by... Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute featuring Dr. Stephen Lucy, who's here with us now on Jaguars Today on 1010XL in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. What's up, Doc? How are you?
I'm great. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. We hear all the time at this time of year about high ankle sprains. I almost feel like when I was growing up, I never heard of a high ankle sprain. Is this new terminology, or have we always been aware of these things, or what?
No, I tell you, I can remember back when I was doing the USFL, we had a linebacker come down with it. Every week I'd go tell Coach Lenny and Fondy the guy'd be back the next week, and 12 weeks later, Lenny was about to kill me and sent the guy back to San Diego. And, you know, that was sort of mid-80s, and we didn't really understand it, but the high ankle sprain, I guess, got more popular with the popularity and the notoriety of the NFL. All of us have probably had a regular ankle sprain. You come down and roll it. That rolls in. A high ankle sprain, somebody has to do it to you. In other words, usually somebody rolls up on the outside of your ankle, and instead of rolling in, it twists out and rolls out. So it's kind of the reverse of a regular ankle sprain. Takes a lot longer to get better.
Is it just a case of rest? Is that all you can do for a high ankle sprain? Or
no, I mean, as you step on a regular ankle sprain, your ankle's still pretty stable. When you step on a high ankle sprain, it tries to spread those two bones. If you look at your ankle, you got an inside bone and an outside bone. They're actually two different bones. It tries to spread them. So at first, you put people non-weight bearing, put them in a boot, cast, or whatever. You know, and like everything, the mild ones get better in a reasonable time, and the bad ones can really drag out, like the one I was just talking about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You just don't know. Jamal Charles got one for Kansas City. They say it's pretty mild, not expecting him to play this week, but maybe a short-term deal. Whereas Mercedes Lewis, now we're looking at 6 to 8 weeks, and who knows, sometimes that even stretches out as the time approaches.
It does. I think the NFL did a study, and I think the average time back was somewhere around 3.5 weeks for a true high ankle sprain, taking them across the board. So definitely longer than the regular ankle sprains. And then, you know, it's different for the guys that depend on cutting, the running backs, the wide receivers, maybe the tight ends, then the big guys in the middle. They can brace them up and tape them up pretty good, and they can come back sooner.
It's fun. You never... Your eyes know when something's not quite right with a human body. You know what I mean? We kind of cringe when we see joints bend the wrong way and things like that. It just, it's disturbing. RG3's ankle, you knew something was wrong with that thing, and it turned out to be a dislocated ankle because the foot, didn't ever straighten out on that play. That, they said, was the best case scenario. Didn't have a broken bone in there. They're hoping to get him back in about a month. Does that seem like a reasonable timetable for him?
Well, if it was truly dislocated, that's pretty aggressive, you know, and I would probably look for him to be back a little after that. And that, you know, if they're saying, you know, 6 to 8 weeks on Mercedes, I think they're being a little optimistic on RG3 because he depends on his legs and cutting, and I would anticipate it be longer. But these guys are superb human specimens, and they do get better faster.
And they can have round-the-clock treatment on that thing, right? You and I are rehabbing that thing. Maybe we're spending an hour a day, and the rest of the time we're going about our normal business. Their business is rehabbing that injury. And having that much more time to pay attention to, it's got to, I would assume, speed up the healing process.
It really does. It reduces the swelling faster. They get out for meetings, but as you said, they're in there at 7 and they're leaving at 5 or 6. And when they're not in an important meeting, they're in treatment, and it helps.
All right, Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians, by the way, at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of the Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Doc, it's a nasty reality. I have a feeling we'll have more fresh injuries to discuss next week. We appreciate you popping in.
Hopefully not on the Jaguars, though.
Let's hope that's not the case, or that is the case, however you want to take that. Thank you, Dr. Stephen Lucy, on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat here with the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Injury Report. Again, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today asked you, with the Hall of Fame ballot coming out yesterday, Tony Boselli, Jimmy Smith on the Hall of Fame ballot, do you think any former Jaguars will ever make it into the Hall of Fame? Ever's a long time. Tony, what kind of response do we get?
Here's what we got from Paolo. We got definitely Boselli this year. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag free Bortles. From Nick, we got Fred Taylor, Tony Boselli, Jimmy Smith, Tom Coughlin. He likes them all. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag pride of the Jaguars.
TC's a good call, by the way.
That is a great call.
Tom Coughlin will get, I believe, will get into the Hall of Fame one day.
I think he will too.
Yeah.
No, he's got to.
Two titles, two
Super Bowls, and he took the Jags to two more championship games, you know, as an expansion coach within the first 5 years. Pretty good resume.
From Ben, Fred Taylor will be in the Hall of Fame, but Sully and Jimmy Smith should be. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Paul, Fred Taylor and Tony Boselli deserve it, but playing in Jacks makes it tough. I don't think they make it. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, the best chances are Fred and Tony. I'd say Tony first, but not for a while. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Philip, I think Fred Taylor, Tony Boselli, and Tom Coughlin. Reality? Probably none. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Sean, Jimmy Smith and Freddie T, both top 15 in position. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from DeJags, Tony will. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag it's a sad day. Hashtag Colts fans are happy. I'm guessing that has something to do with the quarterback.
Oh, it's nothing to do with the right tackle?
I don't think so.
All right. By the way, Tony Boselli started 90 games in his pro career. 90 out of 91 games that he played in the NFL. Played six seasons in the league. Made five Pro Bowls. Was a three-time first-team all-pro tackle in the National Football League. Dwight Stevenson played 114 games, although he only started 87 of those. Was not a full-time starter his first 2 years in the league with the Miami Dolphins. And he was a five-time Pro Bowler over eight seasons, a four-time first-team All-Pro. So one more first-team accolade for Dwight Stevenson. Started less games than Tony Boselli. No one ever questions Dwight Stevenson.
No.
Played long enough, had the resume to make it into the National Football League or Pro Football Hall of Fame.
How much of that is Dan Marino's coattails?
Possibly, sure.
I mean, no
question.
I don't, you know, I think that there's that, you know, he's Dan's center. He's Dan's guy. Dan, you know, Dan got in and, you know.
Went to a couple Super Bowls.
Sure.
You know, didn't win them, but went to a couple. And here's Jimmy's problem when you compare him.
Just one problem?
Well, his main problem, because okay. I think, honestly.
His main problem is his drugs. I think it's a bigger problem than his numbers. I don't know that it's the main thing. I just think it's a bigger problem than the numbers.
I think the era he played in is the bigger problem.
Sure, sure. And again, where he's, but they're both top 15 on the list. In 5 years, they probably won't. Either one be in the top 20.
Right. When we say both, we're talking about Jimmy Smith and Isaac Bruce.
Oh, Jimmy Smith and Fred Taylor, too. Somebody tweeted that Fred was in the top, which Fred, I think, was 12th when he retired, and now he's already in 15th.
Correct. Fred's, and I agree with the caller earlier, said he only made one Pro Bowl, and the Pro Bowl can be a fickle thing. We understand that. It was a great era for running backs in the AFC. I mean, when you talk about the guy, there were deserving. You look at Fred, and I've gone back and looked at this. There's not more than 1 year to me that was glaring in terms of when you compared him to Edgerrin James and Clinton Portis and LaDainian Tomlinson and Terrell Davis and all his contemporaries as to why he wasn't one of the top three guys. You could make arguments for three guys over him in any given year. I'm not saying they should have won the argument every time, but it wasn't as bad as it was made out to be. Oh, Fred's just in Jacksonville. He played in a running back rich era. Jimmy Smith put up some ridiculous numbers. We know 12,000 yards, 862 catches, scored 67 touchdowns in his career. You compare that with Isaac Bruce, however, who caught, what did he catch here? 1,256 targets, 1,024 receptions, so about 150 more. They average about the exact same yards per catch. You had 15,000 career receiving yards for Isaac Bruce. So, again, played a few more games. Average yards per game, 68 for Bruce, 69 for Jimmy. I mean, they're identical players. Isaac Bruce scored 91 touchdowns compared to 67, and he's got a Super Bowl ring. And he starred in that Super Bowl as well when they won it. He caught the big bomb from Kurt Warner.
And he's on what's going to be considered a legendary team.
Legendary offense.
Yeah, ultimately, legendary offense and a team
Marshall
that will be memorable for...
Right?
Yeah.
Pace will get in.
Warner's probably
going to
get in.
Kurt Warner will get in. I don't know if he'll get in this year. And Torrey Holt's got a reasonable chance to get in to join him. The greatest show on turf. So, yeah, there's definitely some of that. You're right about that. I mean, the team you played with, the group you played with.
I don't think either of the three get in. I just don't.
Boy,
maybe
to me,
way
I would,
down the road,
who would you
but
put
even
in?
Then,
what order would you vote them in?
Well,
for you personally.
Well, you know my bias. I'm anti Jimmy and I'm pro Fred, and I like Tony a lot. He's a good friend of mine. But so I would go. I would go Tony, Fred, Jimmy. But that's based. That's
I would
with
do
bias.
The same thing.
That's with bias.
That's
with
that. For
but,
me,
but
I don't think
if you look at the
biased.
Numbers, if you look at the numbers, Jimmy is really got better numbers than the other two guys. Well, I mean, Tony doesn't have numbers.
4.6
you know I mean?
Yards per carry jumps out at me. With the, you know what I do?
No, it
honestly,
does.
If I were the presenter, I guess Sam Kavaris would be the guy to get up and stump for the Jacksonville guys because the local guy who's the
sure.
representative with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I'd say, you know what? I abdicate the rest of my time to Jim Brown over here. Who Jim Brown
exactly.
always said
yeah,
Fred
right,
Taylor's
Fred's
the most
the
talented
yeah.
running back. He's the best guy in the league. I'd say, all right, Jim Brown, tell us if Fred Taylor's worthy of the Hall of Fame. I'll
like
shut
it.
Up for the next 5 minutes. And
hey, guess what's never going to happen? That.
That, boy. Yes.
No, that, so. Would, that would absolutely never happen. And I happen to agree
Sam's
with you guys.
Sam's going to give up his time.
For me, it is Bocelli, Fred, Jimmy in that order, too. And when you look at Jimmy, though, he only got hurt for the 1 year. You know, it's he was consistent for a decade. Basically, and those other two guys, you can't say that about him because Fred, it's not his fault. These guys in this league, they get hurt. There's nothing they can do about it. You get hurt, but Fred missed a lot of time in his career due to injury. When we were doing the Pride of the Jaguar stuff, and I've told this story before, going back and watching and listening to highlights of Fred Taylor, there is no doubt in my mind he's a Hall of Fame caliber football player. No doubt in my mind. I think when you look at what it takes to get into the Hall of Fame, though, that these three guys, for whatever reason, they all have a reason to come up short. And whether it's because their career just wasn't long enough, because Fred Taylor was never consistently the top three at his position
Pro Bowl, yeah.
while he was playing for Jimmy Smith, there's the reasons for the off-the-field stuff, and he's going up against all these other receivers in this era, too. There's reasons for all three not to get in. There's enough of them that it doesn't feel like any of them in the next 10 to 15 years it's going to happen.
I can
them.
Agree with you. I think ultimately Coughlin will be the first one
Me too.
To get in.
I
and then, you know, I think.
I could see in 20 years Tony Bocelli stepping up to that podium
I could
and,
too,
and finally being recognized
so
for how
dominant.
Great he was.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if Gale Sayers can do it,
right.
well, Tony was, I would argue, as dominant a player. I mean, what more can you want? Five Pro Bowls, three first team
sure.
All Pros in six full seasons. With the Jags. We had on Sirius with MJD last week, we had Terrell Davis on. Could not stop raving about Fred Taylor. He's like,
yeah.
this guy. I mean, you know, if he didn't have the injuries early on, and then you look at the numbers, he's like, he'd be a shoe-in Hall of Famer. Talent-wise, he didn't question that. That's another guy, TD.
You just don't see that combination of power and size.